Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Friday night, you had a guy called in who, you know, was one of these guys that says, you know, I love this country, I love freedom, I love small government, but we gotta lock our border down and ban the Muslims from coming in, but I believe in freedom and small government. I'm like, oh, please.
Right. Yeah, he wants a total police state, but at the same time claiming out of the other side of his mouth that he wants freedom and small government. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and the thing one of the parts I wanted to get to is that, you know, these people talk about national security. Like, well, what about our national security? And one of the things I would say is if you want national security, here's what you do. You get all those people in Washington, D.C., and you tell them to take a long walk off a short pier into an active volcano. So that's one way of doing it. But one of the things he mentioned was, like, what about the terrorist attack that happened in London? You don't want that to happen here. I'm like, and the thing of it is that if you actually looked up that attack – the guy that did that, he wasn't an immigrant or a refugee. He was a natural-born British citizen.
Ah, okay. Yeah, see, I didn't know enough about it. You're referring to the Ariana Grande bombing that happened in London.
Right. And what's even more shocking is that this guy had been on the British radar. He actually was in a documentary about Islamic terrorism, left the country, I think he went to go fight alongside ISIS, and then he came back into the country. And even people in his mosque had reported him as being a suspicious person,
wow.
And the government there did nothing. I've been very familiar with reproductive carts for years, and the thing about reproductive carts is that if it's a game that's very popular, that, you know, that is hard to get, like one of the most popular games, say, on the Super Nintendo is a game called Earthbound. That game cartridge, that cartridge goes for $250.
Wow.
But if you actually want a physical car, but if you just want a physical one to play on a Super Nintendo, you know, you can go get a reproduct for $50. Usually it's very easy to tell the difference between a reproduction and an original. Like one of the game stores I went to, they actually managed to get in. Someone turned in an original copy of Earthbound that was complete in the box with the – this was a special edition that came with a player's guide.
Wasn't it like a humongous box?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that
game. They had that thing – for $750. I'm like, who's going to buy that? And I'm like, someone bought it.
Somebody bought it. Yep.
Yeah, you know, I think a libertarian banker is he was talking about this when he came to visit that day.
What, Earthbound?
Yeah, he had some kind of special knowledge about it. I think he might have been in the business of selling, like, antique carts or something.
Hmm. Now, the question is this a good time to get into Bitcoin life? Because the price, I don't know if you've been watching, Johnny Ray, but It's been dropping.
Has it? No, I haven't been watching the past few days. I broke my phone, so I'm...
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's
What'd
in
you
the,
do to it?
I just...
Drop it?
Yep, I just swept it off a counter, and...
You didn't have a case on it? You don't have a case?
No. I broke it some months ago, and that just started a chain of me not getting a case, breaking it, thinking...
Breaking it further.
Got to get a case.
Oh, God.
Got to get a case and getting it repaired and then breaking it,
That's
getting it
right.
repaired.
That's right. You did send it in for repair.
Right. So it's in the shop now, getting
you
a new
it
screen.
Back
yes.
For another new screen.
Uh-huh.
Are you going to order a case for it this time?
Maybe. Maybe not.
What does it cost to replace a screen on a smartphone?
$150.
My God.
I know.
Now, you had told me before that you had, what, the S4, the Galaxy S4?
Right.
You can get a brand new one for $150.
Okay. That sounds smart. I mean, but a case for 20 or 30 or however much.
Yeah.
That's the investment that I need to make.
That is definitely.
The OtterBox.
The OtterBox, I mean, I'm sure there's somebody out there, some company that's competing with the OtterBox and has something that's, you know, just as good. I just don't know what that company is.
Uh-huh.
And the last time I was looking at phones, I literally went to the OtterBox website to see what phones they're making cases for to narrow down my choices, because there's a lot of phones out there, right?
Uh-huh.
But if you drop these things, man, I mean,
yeah, it's safe.
It's a crapshoot. In a recent in-depth article at freekeen.com, I discussed the out-of-control fees to send Bitcoin. The executive summary of that piece is that Bitcoin is somewhat broken due to the high fees that have been caused because of the Bitcoin network not being able to scale to consumer demand. And we've talked a lot about the fee situation here. It seems to have been remedied somewhat recently. Since this agreement that we'll talk about in a moment that a lot of the people in the Bitcoin industry came to several weeks ago, what they call the mempool has been going down. Now, the mempool is the area where Bitcoin transactions are held if they don't have enough, if they don't have enough of a fee to get through into a block and get mined, and we can talk about what all that means here in a moment, but this mempool is basically like a waiting area for Bitcoin transactions that just don't have enough fees to be competitive and get, you know, get through, basically.
Right, and the mempool had been filling up into the weekend and then clearing out in the weekend, over the weekend.
Had it been? Okay.
Yeah, back... before the New York agreement, that was the that transaction price situation where the transaction fees were rising.
Yeah, it was going crazy.
It would clear once a week, you know, when the volume was down. But then it stopped, and it would be a couple of days after that it would clear, and it was starting to. And then the mempool started. It drained out.
The fees have been rising over the last 6 months, and that has killed off the previous usefulness that Bitcoin had for microtransactions or even small dollar transactions. So, for instance, if I just came from downtown Keene, New Hampshire, where there are businesses that accept Bitcoin as payment, but when fees were $2 per, you know, Bitcoin transaction, why would I want to go and buy a soda at Corner News for a dollar and pay $2 worth of a fee on top of that? No one sane would do something like that. So the high fees had started to, I think, really hurt the Bitcoin ecosystem. Even though the price was going up, the fees were also going up. And so it had sort of had this dichotomous look of being successful with the price, but on the other hand, being less useful behind the scenes in, you know, in reality.
Yeah, I think one of the great selling points of Bitcoin originally was it was had kind of an international flavor, and part of that was these low transaction fees that allowed people in various regions who have, you know, possibly widely disparate incomes could be very low.
Poor.
Very poor people. Bitcoin of the low transaction fees empowered those people to send money where before they couldn't do it at all.
Right, because a dollar's, you know, perhaps an entire day or week's worth of income for those folks. So nobody in a poor area is going to want to spend a dollar to send money. I mean, if they can avoid it, they're going to go with something else. And there are a bunch of other options besides Bitcoin now. So, you know, if you want to send cryptocurrency, you can use Dash and you can send it for a fraction of a penny. So you've got the SegWit camp, the segregated witness camp. The other camp are those who support increasing the block size. Now, it's currently 1 megabyte, and these folks would like it raised to 2 or beyond. The big blockers, as they are called, argue that the limit on the block size was originally put in place to fight spam transactions on the network, and they say that Bitcoin's anonymous creator, Satoshi Nakamoto's vision, was clearly against limiting the block size. And they can link to Satoshi's old writings to show pretty clearly that Satoshi Nakamoto had the intention for Bitcoin to scale up with the consumer demand, meaning that he supported increasing the block size as a solution to increasing the transaction volume or the potential transaction volume on the network.
Well, in his white paper, I know in the introduction, one of the reasons, one of the raison d'etre of Bitcoin was for people to be able to transact their money with low transaction fees. That's right.
Correct.
There in the first paragraph.
And it had accomplished that for a long time.
There's a book called The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion.
One of your three books that you've ever read?
Yeah, that, The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler, and another book called The Beasts of the Apocalypse by Olivia Marie O'Grady.
Oh, that's one you've not mentioned before. Okay.
Yeah.
Normally you mention Henry Ford. Go ahead.
These books, it's too many hours. I would need hours, and then you've got other list callers.
Yeah,
they would have to look up this on their own. But the gist of it in a nutshell is this. The Protocol of the Learned Elders of Zion, first of all, the Jews claim it's a forgery. Of course they're going to say that, but it's authentic. It's absolutely genuine. The Tsarist Russian police, the Jews claim that they forged it. But it's a plot, in its simplest terms, a Jewish plot to control the world through media.
I thought you said you weren't going to be talking about the Jews. Turns out you are talking about them again.
Through finance, through
the
media.
Is there ever anything that you think about besides Jewish people?
Yes, I do. I think about also how blacks have destroyed this country.
I think that a lot of your hatred that you have for other people, Scott, is completely baseless. It's based in hating groups. It's based in not looking at the individual.
No, some of it's injury. Some of it is injury.
You were injured?
When I was swindled out of $190,000 from Lehman Brothers, I blame the Jew squarely for that loss, absolutely for that loss.
Okay, but not every Jew was involved with Lehman Brothers.
No, I understand that.
But, Scott, have you ever thought about judging people strictly on their behavior and not on their ethnicity?
Of course, there are people there are people that are white and Christian that I deem white trash that I wouldn't have anything to do with.
Okay.
It's not just because of someone's merely white.
So someone's behavior can give you a reason to hate them, but could a Jew's behavior cause you to appreciate that Jew?
It would matter I don't answer your question. I automatically avoid contact with these people.
Hung like Jesus. Scott the Bigot has never talked to a black man besides behind a cash register in his life.
So we know whatever he says comes from a base of ignorance.
Sure.
That's not what I want to speak. I work with someone like this.
Really?
And they don't get out at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a constant diet of Alex Jones, Breitbart, and whatever right wing claptrap they subscribe to. And, you know, they're basically harmless most cases. It's the ones that start talking about making groups and starting these gun clubs or whatever. Anything had to do with violence. When they start talking like that, those are the types of Jesus you watch. Scott, he's harmless. He's just, you know, he's just gorges himself on Alex Jones and whoever he's listening to. And I'm glad you would stay away from me, Scott, because I would appreciate that.
Scott?
Yeah, I hear what Hung Like Jesus said. I am not ignorant. Believe me, I'm very well read.
You're the definition of ignorant, Scott. You've never had any experience talking with a black person before.
Let me get this straight, so we'll understand each other. You're saying that for example, Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party, they were a bunch of morons. That's what you're saying.
You talking to me?
Yeah.
Is that what I'm saying? No, I had that thought was not even in my brain at all, man.
Yeah, he didn't say anything about Adolf Hitler, but...
No, I'm saying that I'm giving an example that just because someone is a bigot, a racist, does not mean that they're an imbecile. They're ignorant.
No, there's a difference between being stupid and ignorant.
I got a question about the guy you just called in called Hung for Jesus.
Hung Like Jesus, yes.
Is he saying that people that listen to Alex Jones are racist? Is that basically what he was saying? I'm confused.
Well, I mean, I don't want to put words in his mouth.
He wasn't saying that people who listen to Alex Jones are racists, but he was saying that racists listen to Alex Jones.
I would say that could be true. What do you think, Russell?
Yeah, that's probably true, but I listen to Alex Jones all the time, and I'm not racist, so
okay.
I'm just...
Yeah, I don't know what percentage of Alex Jones' listening audience is racist. I would doubt it's a majority or anything like that. He's got a big audience. I mean, there's a lot of people that listen to Alex Jones. You know, some of them listen to him just because he's entertaining, not necessarily because they agree with him. Go ahead.
I mean, he's actually very good at predicting stuff, though.
Is he
a lot of times?
What does he predict?
I think his record's pretty good. He's throwing a lot against the wall, and sometimes it sticks, sometimes it don't.
You don't need to have a global government for ultra-rich people to get rich and stay rich, right? Like, there's no global government right now. And
yeah, you do it because they're parasites. So the only way they can continue to get rich is by continuing expanding the government, which, you know, that makes sense?
Well, no, I see what you're saying, but... Ultimately, there are a bunch of governments in the world, and not all of them want to expand into a world government because that means they would lose their sovereignty. It would mean that they would lose their control. And those individual governments individual may not be the right word, but the governments of the world, many of them are going to push against the idea of globalism or a one world government because they like their little fiefdom. They like their control that they have. Kim Jong-un, for instance, or Venezuela.
We are seeing some of that now, but I mean, I don't see it really making any difference. Like right now, we're doing nationalism across the world, which I think is a good thing. It's not perfect, but at least it pushes back against the global government, but it also has its own problems.
What is a person who wants to get rid of nations but doesn't want a global government?
Well, that would be a libertarian.
Johnny Ray, I suspect you probably agree that it's, you know, the individual that matters most. It's their rights that are paramount, that these other concepts are just ideas, that the countries of the world, the idea of a global government, these are just the creations of the mind that are used as a justification to commit violence against our neighbors.
I think that the statists don't really appreciate the individual at all, the statist being someone who puts the interests of the nation over the individual. And I think once you understand how deep and how big a single individual is, then it kind of beggars the concept of the nation. When you understand how beautiful an individual is, then you can see how shabby a nation is next to it.
What does that mean when they say they want Bitcoin to be a settlement layer?
Well, I'm basing that off of Roger Ver. He came on the show several weeks ago, and he used that term, settlement layer. He said that the small blockers want to turn Bitcoin into a settlement layer, they wanted to turn the blockchain into a settlement layer. A settlement layer would be, for example, if I owe you $8 and Daryl owes me $10, then on the blockchain that would turn into
$2?
Yeah, like Daryl owes you $2.
I see.
Daryl owes me $2 and owes you $6. But it simplifies the majority of the transactions take place off of the chain, and they're simplified and they're put and then they are cemented into history and real transactions on the blockchain itself.
And that somehow reduces the amount of data going on to the blockchain.
Right.
Is that the idea?
Right.
But isn't the problem with that it trusts whoever it is that's doing the off the blockchain transactions to some extent?
Right. And that
is centralization there.
Yes. And one of the charges leveled by the big blockers against the small blockers is that the small blockers are coming from, or some of the prominent speakers, some of the people on the core team are coming from a business that markets off-chain
solutions. Like I understand the U.S. dollars, the big boy on the block, you know, and that a lot of countries rely on it, but that is at the whim and the behest of politicians so they can inflate the money supply of the dollar and all the other fiat currencies in the world, you know, whenever they feel like it. And that basically is a hidden tax against you, the user. And that's a danger. That's a danger to your wealth. It's a danger to your freedom. And so Bitcoin is, when I say it's the most important currency, I say that because, not because it's as the most widely used, it's not even close to the most widely used, but it's the most important in that it's the most fundamental change to money that we have ever seen in our lifetime or in our grandparents' lifetimes or generations beyond that. It's such a fundamental change that it's hard to really... it's hard to overstate how important it is. I mean, it's incredible. One of Bitcoin's greatest strengths is that it was not created or issued by big banks or governments. It was the world's first decentralized digital currency. It's cryptographically secure and can't be hacked or taken offline because it's of its distributed, decentralized global network. It's truly an amazing creation and has changed the future of money as fundamentally as the way the internet has changed communication. And beyond that, we don't really even realize how much it has changed these things yet, in the same way that the internet's still a relatively new invention on the scale of, you know, time, right? Like it's only been around for a relatively small amount of time, and it's already had a tremendous impact on our lives, but we're still in the very beginning phases of the internet. We're still in the beginning phases of Bitcoin as well. It's only been around for less than a decade at this point. So where it can go from here, the sky's the limit, if it can get through these initial, you know, this kind of initial bumpy road that it's going down at the moment. There's also a major difference between how centrally issued currencies like the U.S. dollar are administered. The U.S. dollar, controlled by the Federal Reserve for the benefit of the evil, aggressive U.S. federal government, is administered at the whim of politicians, whichever ones happen to be in power at the moment. They can inflate the money supply at will, destroying the value of any dollars that you might be holding. Now, this is a fundraising method for them, a hidden tax. Bitcoin, on the other hand, is decentralized, which means that it's not subject to the will of one man or a group of unaccountable men. You might be wondering, well, how do these people come together, all these different groups and individuals, and improve Bitcoin technically to allow it to scale up to consumer demand? And the answer is they might not. They might not come together. And those who are refusing to come to the table to talk and compromise are planning to possibly break away on August 1st. So what could happen? Well, lots of different things. But here's what I hope will be the most likely scenario. And that is SegWit 2X, as it is called. So in late May at the consensus event in New York, an agreement was finally reached after months and months, if not years, of arguing and discussing and debating over how these changes should be made. A bunch of major Bitcoin-related businesses and holders of approximately 83% of the mining power in the Bitcoin world came to this agreement. And it gives the SegWit advocates what they want, which is SegWit. And then within 6 months, increases the block size from 1 megabyte to 2. So both sides came to the table and they agreed, most of them did, that let's do both. Let's do both of these things that people have been arguing about for a long time. And it looks like most people are behind this, but not everybody. While the miners are arguably the most important decision makers in the Bitcoin universe, the full nodes also perform an important role of block and transaction validation. In this case, right now about 15% of the approximately 7,900 full nodes are signaling their support for the user-activated soft fork. So they've got a very small number of the full nodes who are backing this proposal. You would think, well, what's there to be concerned about here? I mean, they don't have 86% of the miners are behind the SegWit2x proposal, which would mean that presumably the user-activated soft fork people have a very small portion of mining behind them, if anything at all. They've even got a small portion of the number of full nodes, 15% as of like 2 days ago when I finished this article, and it had only gone up from like 11% a couple weeks ago. So there's not exactly a huge rush of support behind this. So why are we even talking about it? Why is this something worth discussing? Is it really, do these user-activated soft fork people actually pose a threat to the Bitcoin system as it is?
Well, I know some people, some of these big blockers, and I am really pretty ignorant about this August 1st thing coming up, but I know some of the big blockers think that SegWit is just poison all by itself.
They're planning a schism in the Bitcoin network on August 1st. They plan to accomplish this by ordering their nodes to refuse to validate any blocks that do not include a signal that indicates that the miner who mined that block supports their proposal, the UASF proposal. So basically, those full nodes, as I was explaining before, they do some validation of the transactions and the mined blocks on the network. They're going to say, to any blocks that aren't in their camp, that aren't signaling favor for the user-activated soft fork. They're going to refuse those blocks. And if they have miner support behind them when they start refusing blocks, that, as I understand it, is what causes the soft fork, where Bitcoin splits into two Bitcoins. And we'll get into that here in a moment. So if they... If a soft fork would mean that the point in time at which the blockchain, which is the public ledger that goes back to the very beginning of the currency in 2009 and contains every transaction that has ever occurred, it'll then fork into two. So each of those blockchains then would have all of the transactions from 2009 through August 1st at the time of that fork. But then after that time, they would have different transactions likely being logged to each chain. And that means there would be two Bitcoin networks at that point, each of them competing to be the real Bitcoin. You get two Bitcoins out of this deal if you hold on to it? That sounds like a good thing. Problem is, the value of both of them may plummet dramatically. We don't know what's going to happen if this fork occurs on August 1st. How the market will handle this, which Bitcoin will be valued higher than the other, what will be traded for what will come out, the most popular winner. It seems like it would be the SegWit 2X one because they've got the miner support behind them. And there's some technical aspects to this that get, you know, again, a little bit too off in the weeds. But basically, if one of these blockchains, the UASF one, for instance, doesn't have a whole lot of miner support behind it, well, then it's very weak. It can be subject to an attack. It can be subject to, basically a wipeout, essentially, where anything that's transacted on that particular blockchain eventually might end up going away if, for instance, the other chain can somehow overtake it. Now, I don't understand exactly how all that plays out, but essentially it becomes dangerous once the Bitcoin forks, if that happens, if that occurs, and it may not on August 1st, but if that occurs, you do not want to spend or purchase any Bitcoin. You don't want to receive Bitcoin, spend it, buy it. You don't want to do anything on the Bitcoin network until the dust settles, so to speak.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.